Jaspreet Boppadai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back. You're with Greenwashed. Jaspreet here with Don. And if you joined us this morning, you might have heard a blast from the past. We had Margaret Byfield from the American Liberty, Stewards of Liberty, and we had a curated clipping of the interview we had with her last year. We began that interview, Don, when we were talking about private property rights, and we ended it at C40 cities. And I think that makes the perfect segue into the climate crazy segment. And there is talks now of the RMA going to be reformed and hopefully a greater emphasis on private property rights. And I think this is a good point to look back at why we even had a Resource Management Act in the first place in the early 90s. If I go back through the documents, official government documents, there's this report here by Sir Geoffrey Palmer QC, who says that the Resource Management Reform Project was the most massive law project ever undertaken in New Zealand in those days. And then he says the international inspiration for this project was the Brundtland Report. The Brundtland Report, which was presented to the United Nations, it pioneered the concept of sustainability that received international acceptance at the Rio Earth Summit. And lo and behold, Don, New Zealand decided we have to be the first kids off the bat and make this massive convoluted beast called the RMA. That I think nothing else has done a greater disservice to private property rights than this one. But of course, you might have a different view.
No, not a different view at all. But it did take me a long time to formulate a view, because like most New Zealanders, they did think the RMA was going to be the best thing since sliced bread. It was going to stop or make things perhaps enabling, more enabling, not disabling, as it turned out to be. Than the old Town and Country Planning Act and things like that. And I don't have a great history here. But even just going back, talking about Brundtland, the formative stuff for all of this was long before the Brundtland Papers of, what was it, 1987 or 88. We know, as we've talked about on the show many times over, the push for this, the Sierra Club, the clubs, there's many clubs that were involved, and the formative stuff led to the Sustainable Development Goals. So it's all there. And so the RMA, we spent 10 years trying to get to know what it meant. There was many, in fact, it set up a new division of universities almost, which was around planning. You know, let's educate a lot of planners. But we didn't really understand what they were learning until probably this century, when really the emphasis of the RMAs, or the thrust of the RMA, started to become apparent. And it was basically, you can't do stuff. It was, you can't do. We turned this country into a can't-do country. And that's been my issue for the entire this century. It's what I lobbied against, lobbied against or lobbied for, the can-do. And it's great to see that finally in 2024, the ACT Party is getting things out of the blocks. It's taken a year since the coalition was formed, but they are now hoping to get this reform through. So the proof of the pudding will be in the eating, what Simon Court and others have got. But, you know, I see their press statement the other day says ACT has spent years campaigning to scrap the RMA. Now we're doing it, and we look forward to seeing people building anything from a backyard retaining wall to new bridges, hydro dams, faster and cheaper. Well, hooray for that, because the RMA has put massive costs on all of us, some of it you wouldn't see, but everything you buy, everything you trade has got costs of the RMA in it.
I mean, for such a small country, we've bound ourselves in all sorts of knots for 30 years. That's the ultimate climate crazy for me. Is the environment any better for that? Well, the jury is still out there. There is certainly a lot of bank balances very much the better for this.
I was going to say that, Jaspreet, the legal profession has well and truly fatted itself out of this whole regime. And, you know, that seems par for the course. And we let it happen. We let it happen where this profession, it's useful. I can't say it's not useful. We've all had to use legal profession and lawyers in their lives. But the argument around the people that put up they can't do always seem to win every time under what's called the precautionary principle. So, hopefully it all goes back to, resource management is all evidence-based, less emotive stuff. People in Auckland shouldn't be able to complain about what I do on my farm in Southland, all that sort of thing. So we get more enabling, a more enabling society. And guess what? When we get that, we'll still get milked by lawyers and accountants and consultants and you name it. But at least we might have our private property rights back.
Grumpy Don back. But
but like Margaret's fighting for, Margaret Byfield, we might have our private property rights back. And that's, I can rest in peace at that point.
100%. But we also ended that segment, the short curated segment we had for our viewers this morning, with talking about C40 cities. And Margaret said there are 40 cities in the US that have signed up for this initiative. In New Zealand, we just have one, Auckland, the one city that has a third of the population of the country there. And what did I see this last weekend in the climate crazy news? But stuff passes as regular news. This headline that says, you're going to have to start paying to park everywhere in Auckland, even the berms. Mm. And they say that the prescription is coming. The medicine is bitter, whether people like it or not. There'll be areas now which will be under proactive parking management, which pretty much translates into no more free, unlimited on-street parking. The Auckland Transport Planning Overlord, not my word, stuff. Article, Andrew McGill says that AT Auckland Transport would consult the affected communities and listen to their concerns, but he's resolute about the need for change. So yeah, he's going to make the right noises, but all that you say, none of that matters. He says parking spaces are not free. They don't cost nothing to maintain. If you need a car, you need to provide the space for it. The private market cannot dump the problem on Auckland ratepayers. The Auckland ratepayers are the private market essentially, but you made it deliberately worse when the government, in its wisdom, decided to tell the builders that you don't no longer need to provide parking or have off-street parking for all the new high-density apartments coming up. So guess what? The streets are clogged. And guess what? It's probably time for you, plebs, to lose your wheels. He says it's not going to happen all at once. They're going to start with 7 odd areas every week for each of the next 10 years. So yeah, 7 areas will be consulted on and have the changes rolled out each of the year for the next 10 years. By the end of the year, all 70 areas would have been overlord. They say this might start the mother of all fights, but the status quo is not an option. So guess what? That's what you get if you live in a C40 city. Whatever excuse they have, fun times.
Fun times. I mean, having driven into Auckland a few times, and you do see those lanes that are blocked off because you can't park on them because at certain times of the day parking is restricted. And boy, is that a nightmare for someone like a Southland farmer coming to town and all of a sudden finding that oops, I'm in a lane that I can't get out of, and I'm
stuck
in the wrong lane because there's only one person in the car, and I'm supposed to be in a T2 or a T4 or whatever it's called. I mean, it's so awkward. I mean, I understand the need for road rules, but the other side of this is, the locals that have got a house just inside the curb, where the houses are, you're not allowed to park on the roadside, because that's public property, of course. You're not allowed to park on the berm because that's where infrastructure could be laid. So you're going to have to find parking off street. You may have to put an underground car parking under your house. I don't know how they're going to manage it, but it's weird. It's just... It's planning, though, Jaspreet. It's planning.
It is planning.
One thing that we're just changing a different direction for a moment. I didn't realize that the fines, they put an Article 4 here, the fines, central government currently sets the limits on parking fines, which have just been changed for the first time since 1999. There are 43 different offences with new limits that come into force on October the 1st, 2024. And for instance, the first one is overstaying not more than 30 minutes. Current fee is $12 maximum by the sound of it. New fee will be 20. Fee will be 20. But there's about, some of them range from $150, like parking in a disabled person's area. And, people that do that, you see it happen and they're not disabled. It is very disconcerting. The new fine will be $750. Etc. Non-electric vehicle in a parking area reserved for charging electric vehicles, $60, going to $100. Well, I don't know, but you know, and then they go on to off-street car parks. Let the sell-off begin, potentially anyway. This isn't an Auckland Transport's court, but it's an Auckland Council's court. If the council identifies off-street car parking facilities that are no longer needed, not good value for money, or in an area that needs redevelopment, they'll likely be sold off or repurposed in some way. So the council's not even going to try and find you the decent place to park your car, even if it's 100 metres away from your house. They're going to sell it off.
They are, as it is, they're selling off that big parking building, aren't they, where around the ferry transport. So all of this.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I haven't caught up with that, Jaspreet. So,
that has been disputed for a while in Auckland. So, yeah, but you can just see C40 cities. The utopia that you're going to be living in, at least they haven't come for the clothes yet, Don. The urban consumption agenda, that was the document that was published. It was like 9 new clothing items a year, 3 if they get really, really aggressive. But what's next on the climate crazy? I think this one from the UK takes the cake. UK to lose its last coal power plant this month at the end of September. This will mark the end of an era that set up the world's first coal power plant. This last one is at Ratcliffe-on-Soar and is going to be shutting down to start a new era with wind and solar powering the nation.
Well, they were the most virtuous country in the world. You know, Maggie Thatcher, to her credit, or you may think otherwise, was to me one of the best prime ministers you'd ever want. She was a free market thinker, but she did have this bent to close down the coal mines and coal-fired power stations, and seems like she's won the day many years after her death. But
coal.
They've made their bed and they're lying in it.
Let them. You believe carbon is going to destroy the world? You deserve all that's coming for you and more.
Especially when you know, we have to believe what we read in many other countries. They're expanding coal fire electricity generation in big volumes. So it just makes no sense.
It makes no sense. India, China have hundreds.
And the British consumer. Hundreds. Yeah. British consumers, sure, they must be being sued. I'd love to do an analysis of world electricity prices. But I dare say, Jaspreet, as you have alluded to in the past, it all depends on the density of the population. What your electricity prices really are. So anyway.
But the next one again is from the UK. So at the same time that they're shutting their coal-powered plants, just that is not enough. A Pollution Watch has done this article, which is on The Guardian. It says, knowing polluting impact of home fires could modify behavior, the study has found. Because not just the traffic and the roads and vehicle emissions are bad, even that fire that you might be sitting and having a drink by on a cold winter's night, it is going to destroy the sustainability of the planet. And this article goes on to refer a group called Mums for Lungs. Seriously, I wish this was a joke. Mums for Lungs that have called for a ban on stove sales and a public health campaign. But the government says it's going to do something called helping people burn better and all of this. We've had guests from Ireland here. We've had, and when we spoke about the fact that they are having now regulations of not burning peat bogs and so on for heat, the Europe, where it is heading, you know, if they could all learn from Germany, it's not that far, the UK, and see what has happened there. Just like New Zealand, Germany is now seeing industrial production go offshore. Nothing is viable. And in the last week, it is so sad to see regional New Zealand industries shut down, because you can just see what's going to happen. It's just going to decimate but the entire community, the fabric of the community. But some of the bigger manufacturers who a couple of months ago had, you know, shut down operations temporarily when the power shortage really hit the roof, have now decided to permanently shut down operations, and who can blame them? But this is what we are heading for if we keep going down the same path.
Yeah, well, look, the Volkswagen company in Germany is under serious pressure. Mind you, they had a whole lot more pressure a few years ago, I think, when they had their emissions scandal outed. It cost them billions in fines, and they still managed to exist. I mean, most companies would go under that that issue. But their market value at the market capitalization is back down to where it was in about 2005, 2007, somewhere in that period. And, you know, it's the biggest employer in Germany with over 300,000 employees, and they're shutting down plants. It's serious.
I can just see everyone back in caves, animal hides, and back to the cart and the horse. Who knows? Yeah. Well, what's next? Well, again, staying with Europe, the headline from France, Don. France's seniors fined for broadcasting climate skepticism unchallenged. Now, this particular segment that caught the fury of the judiciary was actually aired last year, but the judgment came this year because this particular news outlet, CNews, it is considered what is to be far right, or as I call right so far. But it is controlled by a billionaire business magnate, Vincent Bolloré, and provides 24-hour national and global news. So the problem there being that they say you need to have all sides of the story. All right.
But how if bad's you that's just
but
not
if,
right.
if you dare have a segment where there's just a climate skeptic talking with no one else to counter it, they are going to fine you. And the fine in this case was 20,000 euros.
Horrible. Just incredible. What are they going to do to us? I mean, heck.
I don't have a whole lot to lose, Dawn.
No.
much as people seem to think, I'm drifting to a live someone did. Was a few days ago as I have a rolling franchisee about stuff. But no, for the record, a lot of that was spouted on was sheer nonsense. And let's see. Let them do their darndest.
Well, it could only happen in a socialist country, surely. I mean, that's just appalling. The free speech of anyone with an opposing view, they just want to squash with big fines. I mean, I hope there's a backlash against that. I hope there's a backlash.
We have time for just one more climate crazy this week, and this will have to be one that Don and I will cover on in more detail next week's segment. But this is the UN chief, Antonio Guterres, to seek world leaders' backing for the vision of the future. We've had Paul Brennan do the interview with Meryl Mass, but Antonio Guterres, the United Nations, these unelected officials now want a pact covering wars, AI, climate crisis, inequality, so on and so forth, a socialist utopia. They want all countries to sign up for it. We haven't seen anything in the NZ news yet. We shall see who goes and attends this and dots the I's and dashes the T's on our behalf. But there's the UN again going on, wanting itself to be the global governor.
Yeah, and yet there's nothing to see here, according to some of our politicians. There's plenty to see here. There's 58 parts to this global pact. And we've got 193 countries in the United Nations. How dare they try to usurp the sovereignty of my country? And how dare we have anyone from our country allowing it to happen? I'm sorry, we may be a little safe haven in the South Pacific. We want to keep it that way. It's ours, and I want it for us. We'll see what happens, but I've got no time for Guterres or his predecessors. I used to think they were sort of almost godlike, the United Nations. Sorry, the opposite is the upshot there. Hey, after the break, we're going to the break, but after the break, we've got Sean Rush from Sean Rush Law coming back to talk about the Kapiti Coast, what's happening there, what's around the corner. There's a new report out soon. We're talking about something we've just mentioned, actually, how the privilege, the environmentalism of the last sort of 30 years has given the legal profession, a massive boost financially. So we'll talk with Sean after the break. Thanks for listening.
2057 if you want to text us. Be back in a moment.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.